Hey, listeners, ever have trouble getting someone on the phone when you have a question about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. When you hear that Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, you're probably thinking, what's the catch? Well, there isn't one. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans for just $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts.
Our producer, Sean, is a big Mint Mobile guy. Here's what he had to say.
For a fraction of the cost, Mint Mobile proved to have excellent coverage with no drop calls or unsent texts. Plus, they make it super easy for me to activate my device just by following a few simple steps online. And bam, done. It was great.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/literally. That's mintmobile.com/literally and cut your wireless bills to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/literally. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Hi, Dan. How you doing?
Good. How are you? Where are you?
I'm in Santa Barbara, and you're in Paris. We're in two great places.
Santa Barbara sounds pretty nice right now.
Well, Paris sounds very nice to me. Hey, everybody. Rob Lowe here. Literally podcast. The talented Diane Kruger joins us from Paris, from gay Paris. She will be here with us imminently. Ms. Kruger is also a first-time author, a children's book. By the way, I hear children's books are among the hardest books to write. So that's very impressive. Her book is called A Name from the Sky. You know, like actors have credits, they, you know, they work with lots of people and it's all, and when I sort of pick a credit and obsess on it, it doesn't mean that I don't like the rest of their work. It just means that they were in something that I freaking cannot get over. And such is the case with Ms. Kruger. That's saying something. That's not nothing. Anyway, let's get to it. Diane Kruger. What brings you to Paris?
We're actually here for almost a year as a family. I was here making a movie over the summer, and now Norman is about to start his spinoff filming in France. Total coincidence. So
this is the Walking Dead spinoff?
Yeah, his character. I'm not sure what it's called, but it's the Daryl spinoff. Yeah.
In France.
I know, right?
Oh,
who would have thought? Daryl of the Woods.
The mind boggles.
Right?
He's in the Bois de Boulogne.
Probably.
And it is very scary. You know, that show is legendary for a number of reasons, but not the least of which is it was one of the hardest shows in the world to shoot. Like, crew members who I work with are like, oh, I did seasons 3 and 4, or whatever, I did 1 and 2. It's like they still have the, like, tick bites, the mosquito bites, the, like,
yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, Georgia in the summer is definitely a force.
I would love to get him in a secret room and talk to him about Frank Darabont and the season 1 versus season 2. Look, you can't argue with success. Mm. I'm not going to argue with success. That first season was unbelievable. you know, and Darabont is, you know, listen, he made the only one of the few perfect movies, Shawshank Redemption. They say it's a perfect movie.
Yeah, that's so, yeah, you know, Norman loves that movie. He always quotes it too. It's funny. We'll see how it goes here. Norman did say, you know, then in Heavy Prep, he did say that the French team seems a little overwhelmed by the idea of like blowing up the Eiffel Tower or something like that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I working in America versus working in Europe is super different in a lot of ways. I did a show in London recently, and like the scene would be two people at a table and somebody pulls out a gun and there's a squib, whatever. And you would have thought we were doing the beach landing from Saving Private Ryan. And I was like, on my show, 911 Lone Star, we'll have a plane crash sequence before lunch.
Totally. So true. But, you know, there's a charm to it. In my movie that I just finished, I play a pilot, right? And so I had hours and hours and hours of training in like simulators, you know.
Oh, wow.
And I had to like actually learn to like push all these buttons, you know, to truly have it look like I'm flying the plane. And at one point I was like, it was just so complicated. It's all in French and yada, yada. And I was like, why don't we just shoot it in a studio? And we just, you know, I press any button and it does what you want it to do.
Yes.
You know, and they're like, but no, c'est pas possible. No, no, no. We have to make it look like it's real. It was such a pain in the butt. Like, because, you know, when you push certain buttons, the simulation, like the sky, like I'm actually flying the plane, right? So the sky, it will tilt, or like the clouds will turn into rain or whatever, you know, was required in the scene. So if you made a mistake or whatever, it wasn't lined up right, you had to start over. It took forever.
And let me ask you, because I did something where I was like playing an EMT, you know, emergency tech, gnarly rescue dude. And so you go through boot camp and you learn how to suture and you know how to do it. And meanwhile, what you realize, this is the anti Daniel Day-Lewis school of acting, but in all honesty, what you realize if it were a play, that's one thing, but it's edited. It's going to be cut. They're going to be on a close-up. They're going to be on an over-the-shoulder. They're going to be all as they should be, not cutting to avoid the fact that the actor doesn't know how to suture. It's not. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's going to be in other things. And all you do is you put your hand below the frame, and you're doing framey, framety, unbelievable, movie-dy, movie-dy, moody, nobody, blah, blah, bibbity, bibbity, and put your hand up, snap a glove, and fucking people think you're a genius. Come on.
I mean, I agree. To a certain extent. I mean, it was fun to learn all that stuff, but yeah, I definitely, after day, you know, 53, I definitely got a little frustrated with flying a plane or trying to fly a plane.
What movie is this we're talking about? What is it?
It's a French film called Visions, you know, and I mean, it'll be cool. And I'm literally flying that plane in a...
Could you fly a plane now? Like if we're going somewhere and there's a heart attack in the pilot, do you go up into the cabin and figure out how to fly it now? Could you do that?
I wouldn't trust it, but at least I know which button to push to get the autopilot going, you know?
Oh my God, that's great. Now, you have so many things coming out that I can't keep track of all of them, but I hear you have a children's book coming out. What is it called?
I do. It's called A Name from the Sky, and it comes out on October 25th. But during COVID, one of the things that happened is that I started writing a children's book about the meaning of names. Mm. So my mom happened to be there because when I work, she comes to take care of Nova. And she told me all these stories about, you know, me as a child and why I was named, what I was named as. And it just like started, you know, this whole thought process for me about names and we as parents, you know, the names we choose and the aspirations we have for children. And anyways, so I wrote a children's book called A Name from Sky.
I love that.
And that's coming out October 25th. Yeah. And so it's about my name and Nova's name, Nova, Tennessee.
Nova, Tennessee. But you're right. And it's so funny. Naming kids is hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you feel the weight, you kind of like feel like the weight of the world and like, I've known, for example, say Gwyneth Paltrow, I've known her since she was 17. When she named Apple Apple, everybody was like ridiculing her and going, Apple, what? Meanwhile, like, I can't imagine Apple not being Apple. And what you realize, and my brother, my first niece, he went with the name Mabel. And I remember, like, Mabel, is she like an 80-year-old hostess at a roadside diner? What are you doing? And because names conjure up things for people. And now I think Mabel is the greatest name I've ever heard. And it's Mabel. And it's you Mabel, people,
yeah.
It's, you know what I mean? You grow into the name you're given. And then the other thing is, longtime listeners of the show know that I'm obsessed with quoting Lorne Michaels, the great Saturday Night Live producer, because he's very quotable. And I remember having a hard time naming my second son. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like I'd gone through all the names, and every name I thought of reminded me of some asshole I knew when I was a kid, and I didn't, whatever. And Lauren has kids too, and he was naming his kids. And I said, any advice? He goes, I think the king's names work the best, which made me laugh. Henry, you know, Charles.
That's funny.
John. I think the king's names. Nova's not a king. She's a star. She's a star.
She's a star. Yeah, I mean, you know, in Latin, Nova means new beginnings, which seemed very, you know, was very telling for us. You know, Norman already has a son from a previous relationship. And, you know, it's kind of, we had her late in life. And so it felt like very meaningful. And, you know, I love the idea of the brightest star that changes all the time. And you know, it's a new beginning each day, you know, that kind of thing. But I also feel like children, no matter what your name is, even if it's Henry or John, like something super common, there comes that moment when you're like, oh, I hate my name, and people make fun of you and you don't know why. No, we do. I mean, I hated my name. It was very uncommon where I grew up. And I just think that, you know, when your parents tell you that story of what they thought about when they named you, it really gives you power, you know, and makes you realize how much they thought about who you were going to be and what you can do in your life. And so
that's right.
Yeah.
And by the way, I love the name Nova. That's the greatest. That's a great name.
Yeah.
One thing I've noticed is you've done like 500 movies with Liam, it seems like.
I've done two. Yeah.
Two, 500. It's the same number. Same.
Close. Yeah. You know, it's kind of fun to meet. I don't know about you, but it's kind of nice to meet an actor down the road a little bit. You know, it's been 12 years, and I mean, I have really great memories of him. He was really kind back then. And you know, you know how it is. Like, you don't really stay in touch, but then you meet again, and it's kind of you're picking up right where you left off. You know, it's like time did not pass.
We're talking about Liam Neeson, who incidentally is one of my favorite people on the planet. I love him so much.
Oh, yeah, you know him. He's so cool, yeah.
I saw Liam in Anna Karenina on Broadway. Hit legendary production. And with Natasha Richardson, they met during that play.
And oh, wow.
Yeah. And when he came on stage, I'll never forget, he had like overalls on, like no shirt and overalls. And he was like, I mean, it was like Liam in his prime, and it was just this big hulking ripped amazing and it was really, really something. And I remember when he got offered Schindler's List.
Wow,
what an actor. And the fact that I'm obsessed with the arc of all actors' careers, and that, you know, Anna Karenina, Schindler's List, and then at 60 finds himself one of the biggest action stars in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know where the road leads.
You never know. I know. And he really went after that. He tells a story that he wanted to do something different, and he read the script, and he happened to be at a dinner or some film festival with Luc Besson, who was producing it, Taken. And he went up to him. He said, well, I'm probably not on your list, but if you know, I'd love to do this movie. And apparently Natasha said, you know, it's going straight to video. He's like, I don't care. I want to do it. We just told the story, so it's really fresh on my memory. And so I guess that's how he got it. And he also thought it was going to go straight to video. So
the rest is history.
Exactly. Never know.
It was the executive who was in charge of the movie at the studio who said, I read the script. When it got to the speech where the famous iconic speech where Liam goes, you're going to be taken. You know, he's talking to the, you know, and then when he talks to the guy and says, I have a very specific skill set, which makes me laugh to this day. That famous, that famous line, the guy was like, I knew we were making this movie. Literally, it didn't matter what happened before or what happened after. I just knew that speech in a trailer would work. And it does. It's one of the great, I remember seeing Liam give that speech on the phone. I will come and I will kill you with my skill set. It's the best.
Yeah, well, there you go. You never know, right? You just never know.
Where else can you go surfing and skiing in the same day? Or check out a world-class art museum and camp out under a brilliant night sky same day? Or hike through the redwoods and get a luxury spa treatment? There's only one answer, California. No matter where you go across this state, you will find a way to play. I love California. And I have not yet surfed and skied in the same day, although I do both. So that is on my bucket list. It's the most beautiful place in the world. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today. Looking for a sparkling clean bathroom without so much hassle? Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner is here to revolutionize your cleaning future. Just spray today, rinse tomorrow, and voila! Enjoy a sparkling clean shower and tub without any scrubbing. It's the secret to a hassle-free clean bathroom that many are discovering. With over 33,000 five-star reviews, Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner has proven its effectiveness on shower glass, fixtures, tiles, and more, ensuring everything shines with minimal effort. This product has gained a loyal following thanks to its once-a-week application that makes it a standout in the cleaning aisle. Join the ranks of satisfied users who enjoy more me time and less clean time with Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner, available at Amazon, Lowe's, Menards, Home Depot, and Ace Hardware. It's the perfect choice for anyone wanting to simplify their cleaning routine. Don't miss out on a chance to transform your bathroom cleaning with just one application a week. Pick up a bottle of Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner today and join the thousands who've already made the switch to effortless clean. Thanks to Quince, I can get high-end, versatile pieces at fantastic prices. They've got killer luxury essentials that are perfect for my wardrobe. Quince has all the must-haves, like Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweaters from $50, iconic 100% leather jackets, and versatile flow knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of middlemen and passes that savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. One of my producers tried Quince, and here's what he had to say.
I'm really excited to revamp my closet with Quince. There are so many great options at pretty unbeatable prices. I'm really excited to try out the burgundy cashmere crew neck. I love the blue chore jacket. Maybe I'll throw some joggers in there. These are great options at pretty unbeatable prices.
Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/rob for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince, quince.com/rob to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rob. So I love Inglourious Basterds. It's a great movie.
Oh, thank you.
I did not know until I was doing my research on you that apparently and tell me if this is true, that Quentin was not really bi, was like, Diane Kruger, maybe. I don't know. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I heard anyways, you know, because I obviously, for obvious reasons, when that movie came around and he was casting, I was like, well, obviously I want to audition for this. And yeah. I kept hearing, no, 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 no. He doesn't believe you're German. No, no. He wants to cast so-and-so. The role was written for so-and-so. Okay, okay, okay. Yeah, that didn't work out. That didn't work out until at the time, Harvey Weinstein called me. I'll never forget. And he said, listen, I got him to audition. He wants to audition you, but you have to fly to Germany. I'm like, what? I was in New York. And he said, yes. He won't see you in the United States. You have to fly yourself to Germany. And I did. And so it was, one of those where you go, even though it wasn't written for me, I felt like it was. Like, I feel like, yeah, I knew that part, you know, and it was such a tough audition. You know, I felt like walking into a hostile environment from the get-go. And he made me learn so many pages. Like, I feel like they were probably like 12 pages in English and then 12 pages of the same scenes in German.
Jesus.
And he was reading with me. It was just him and me. Nobody was taping. It's just the two of us. But it was one of those great auditions where when I was in the room, you know, I'd learned my lines. I was so prepared and I just knew what I wanted to do with the role. And, you know, his dialogue is like poetry. It really is like a very specific, there's a very specific tone to it, a very specific melody. And I think that's why sometimes roles like this, when they're not American, are tough to cast, because a native German, I mean, I'm native German, but somebody who hasn't lived in the U.S., you know, it's very difficult to understand the underlying meaning, right? The irony, the humor in his writing.
Yeah. Yes.
And so I felt like while I was auditioning, I felt the atmosphere just turn, right? He was like starting to laugh and I could feel him just like be happy, which made me, of course, happy. And the rest is history.
God, that's, I always love, well, I don't love, but in fact, I hate when the feedback comes in that they're not interested.
Right.
And you're like, but hello.
Why?
But and then what I love is when you, like, you knew the only problem was the auteur didn't.
It didn't. Yeah.
One minor problem. Yeah. And I listen, look, and the other thing is, you know, there's a world in which you're like, I'm sorry, I'm not flying myself to Germany to do it. And you did.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely felt a little like, really, I have to fly there. You know, it definitely was like, am I doing this? But then I was like, you know what? A role like this is not going to come along. And at least I can say I tried. And I was lucky enough to be able to do that, right? So why not?
Yeah, no, it's really true. It's a great lesson for all actors out there that, you know, there always comes a time when you just got to like suck it up and go do it, particularly if you feel like it's the role of a lifetime and you believe in yourself and you have a way in. I mean, I had that on the West Wing when I know that they saw me as a curiosity, period.
Mm-hmm.
There was no way I was getting that part.
Really?
No way. No. It was like, you know who likes this? Rob Lowe. Really? All right. And, you know, and it was one of those things where in the room, and I read with Aaron Sorkin, like you read with Quentin, and in the room you could feel the temperature when I walked in, and then you could feel the temperature when I walked out. And it was like somebody had cranked it up 25 degrees. And that always, and it just feels great. And, you know, I think careers always have that. There's always going to be naysayers. I guess what I'm saying is there are always going to be naysayers.
Yes. And, you know, I don't know about you. I mean, you've been around a little bit longer than me and obviously you've lived such an amazing life and career. But I feel like, I don't know if it's because, or if I just feel that way, but certainly when I started out, you know, I started out as Helen of Troy.
That was the beginning. Good Lord.
Yeah, exactly. And people were like, well, she's never going to do anything after that, you know? And then the movie wasn't received as everybody had hoped. And, you know, for so many years, that stigma of there's just nothing else that girl was ever going to do, you know, like stuck on me like fucking glue, you know, excuse my language. So it took forever. And thankfully, I'm European, right? And I made European French films and all that. So that kind of helped change the tide. But man, that was, you know, Hollywood definitely likes putting women in a box, you know?
Yeah, that was, I remember that movie like it was yesterday. I mean, that's, you know, that's Helen of Troy. I talk about iconic, right? I mean, just Brad in that wig alone. Probably might not have been a wig with Brad. He has a wig. He it's so funny. I feel like he can grow his hair long overnight.
I don't remember if it was a wig. I think you might be right. Maybe he didn't wear a wig. I know Orlando Bloom had like extensions, but I don't remember Brad.
So the other thing about Inglourious that I love is the certain movies you never forget where you were when you saw them or what you felt when you saw them. And I remember watching the first sequence with Christoph Waltz and the farmer and turning to the people I was with and said, that actor's winning the Academy Award this year. Yeah. Literally, the scene wasn't even half over. Mm-hmm. And he did. It's one of the great throwdown. And look, what also is amazing is he's been working forever in Europe.
Yeah.
But completely unknown here.
Well, to be fair, I didn't know him either, right? And he did a lot of like TV, like mediocre TV shows and stuff, you know? So like my mom had heard of him, like, 'cause I asked her, when I joined the movie. But I'm not sure that he was like a household name, you know?
But he's a working actor, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And that's the other thing I love is I love journeyman working actors, as you say, maybe from mediocre projects, and they get
the chance.
They get that chance, and I, to this day, cannot name another performance that even comes close to what he does in that movie. It's bonkers.
Yeah, and it was funny that, Quentin knew. He always said that he wasn't sure he was going to be able to make this movie if he didn't find someone like Christoph, right? And I will say, like, Quentin just has this gift of finding actors, maybe because he likes to act and he just loves actors himself, you know? Mm-hmm. But that was such a rare find, and he knew it. Like, I remember at the table read, you know, which was, you know how they are. It's like tons of producers and the studio, and it's very nerve-wracking. And he had asked him to just read it, like not give any intention. And it was kind of odd because he had asked all of the other cast members to, you know, you give a little, obviously, right? You want to make it come off the page. But he was super like flat. And I remember being like, that's so weird. Like, I didn't see that part as being so, you know, normal. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know what to expect. And I remember so well, like, being on set and having my first scene with him. And I mean, just like being like so taken aback of what was happening. I couldn't stop staring myself. Like, I had to remind myself, oh, it's your turn to talk right now, you know, because it was just so amazing.
I know. So I'm curious, at the table read, he's doing it flat. Mm-hmm. And did it play like it played? I mean, that's a long, amazing opening of the scene. Did it play, or was it just like whatever?
It was kind of like whatever. Like, he was just reading it. Yeah, totally. It was not bad. Like, not like people were not like, what's happening? But it wasn't like it was not jumping off the page. No, not at all.
That's
and
so
supposedly
amazing.
Had told him, like, I don't want anyone to know. Like, just like he had told him, don't read it better. I mean, you know, just read it flat.
Yeah, yeah. No, that I get that. That makes sense. Oh my God. And by the way, the farmer is giving one of the great performances of all time.
Yeah, Denis Menouchet. So I've made like four movies with him. He's become kind of a big star here in France. He was like, that's a find too, because he really hadn't done anything before. And look at Lea Seydoux. Like, that was kind of one of her first gigs, too. She doesn't even speak.
It's an amazing, amazing movie. I have to ask you this. The movie theater is a set, right? Or no?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's what I don't get. I'm just going to say it. I've done enough. I've gone on record about how much I love the movie. That's the worst set I've ever seen. That movie theater lot, not the interior, the movie theater with the red walls, and it's too big. It's way too big. I'm sorry. That's a horrible set. Tell me I'm wrong. Go back and watch that movie. That movie's amazing.
I have to go back and watch it. I didn't shoot at it in it. So I don't know. Yeah, I guess. I mean,
it's a bad set. I don't know what's going on with that set.
Okay.
But there's so much. The other thing I love, I always tell young actors that it really is true that the cliche that there are no small parts, only small actors. Because for my money, everybody talks about the bear juice scene. It's a great scene. Brad's great in it. And Eli's great in it. But to me, the scene is stolen by the German officer who ends up getting his head bashed in.
Mm.
To me, he's amazing in that scene.
Yeah.
He has that moment where I think Brad's trying to make fun of him and going, what's on that? What do you have there on your neck? What are that decoration for? And I think he says, for valor or something like that. And it's so... it's such an amazing moment, and it's one word. And to me, Brad's got the extended jaw, and Eli's got the big speech, and it's completely stolen by a guy with one line, in my opinion.
I mean, I will say that there was a lot of rehearsal on this movie. Quentin is he's allergic to people in the background or small parts not doing their part, like the scene in the tavern, when the big shootout, that we rehearsed that scene for about a good 10 days. And when we were filming it, it was kind of like a play. We all had to be in the scene the entire time, whether or not we were on camera or not. It was exhausting to film it, as you can imagine, because you're on all the time. But from playing the game, from doing shots and smoking, no matter if the camera was on me, on Brad, or on a day player, we were on the entire time. And I really do believe that you feel that. You can tell everyone was engaged.
Is attention to detail. How long did it take to shoot that? So that seems what, 15 pages, would you say?
Yeah, that's the really long. I think it took a good five or 7 days, like more than a week for sure.
I'm surprised it didn't take more than that, actually. But that's unbelievable. And that's, and Fassbender had done what at that point? He that was sort of early-ish Fassbender, right?
Yeah, but he'd done that one movie. I can't think of the name now. Where he lost all that weight. People were excited about him. I remember that. I remember when they told me he was cast that people were like, oh, Hunger, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So people were really excited about him. And I totally got why. Like, he was just a star on set. Like, people were just all over him. He was amazing.
He's an amazing actor. He's one of my favorites. For sure, one of my favorites. I mean, the guy's in... I could name five movies off the top of my head that he's a killer in, just a killer.
Yeah.
There's a moment you realize you're ready for what's next in your career. Maybe it's when you're trying a new scone recipe and think, I could open a cafe. Or maybe you're helping a coworker and say, I could teach a course on this. Whatever your moment is, it's never too early to plan for a career that lives longer. That's why, the younger you are, the more you need AARP. For skills training, resume tips, and job listings, visit aarp.org/work.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Quentin, I love that he makes people give up their phones. Was he doing that on that movie where you have no phones, right?
Oh yeah. He gets personally offended. Like I feel like late in the game, someone snuck in a phone and it went off, and I think he called the day, if I remember correctly. Like he just like left, like he was so upset. And I get it to a certain extent. I mean, I totally get it. Like he is so engaged in his movie making. I mean, it's his world. That's all he wants to be and do. And it's his life, you know, and he wrote it and he's like, so I get it. It's so disrespectful having a cell phone go off in the middle of a take.
It's amazing going from the great directors, like a Quentin and what you're describing. And I did a movie with Steven Soderbergh a couple of years ago, and the way the vibe on the set, because they have the same, for the most part, they have the same people, you know, they have their Spielberg is the same. They have a team and everybody knows the vibe, but the attention to detail on those movies is unbelievable. I mean, I've also then on the other bit on sets where literally the dolly grip while he's pushing the camera is checking the Dodger score.
Oh my God.
Literally.
What?
Oh yeah. Oh yes. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I guess not every movie set is the same, but yeah, I that's pretty tough for me to accept.
I remember, working with an actor who out of the periphery of his eye saw someone from the makeup and hair team not in his eye line, way off in the distance, reading a magazine. And was like, I'm out. I mean, that, by the way, that ship, that protocol etiquette ship has sailed, unless you're working for Quentin. I mean, it's all hands on deck. People are checking their phones. It's just unbelievable. I mean, look at it this way. It's the modern day equivalent of, you know, I remember being blown away when looking at pictures from crews in the 40s where they wore suits and ties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just the same thing. It's just, well, it's like all of our society. Our whole society is devolving. But don't get me started. I'll go on.
I mean, I've definitely been guilty of, you know, having my phone on set. Not every set. I don't do that. But I mean, in between takes or a dolly person checking the phone while they're working, that's tough to accept.
I mean, look, and I'm on my phone all the time too. So I'm as guilty of it as next. And God, I forgot Eric Bana was in Troy with you. What a great actor he is. Whew, what a great actor. He's another good
one. He's so awesome, yeah.
Oh. Nicolas Cage, or Nicolas Coppola, as I like to call him. You know, when we were doing Outsiders, he's Francis's nephew, and he would show up, Nicolas Coppola. And then I remember like 4 years later, it was Nicolas Cage and starring in Valley Girl, and the rest is history. Are they going to do, there's all these rumors about a new National Treasure. Have you heard anything? Yes, no?
No, I haven't heard anything about the third movie. It seems a little late in the game now. They did try to make me do like a day on the TV show, but I wasn't available. But, you know, I had a great time on that movie, primarily because of Nick. I don't know what your memory is of him, but I found him to be so fun and so nice and so
hilarious.
You know, one of the quirky and crazy.
One of the most hilarious.
Yeah.
Quirky. I mean, at one point, it's funny that people always talk about like Leo and his posse or the Brat Pack, but nobody ever talks about the fact that Nick Cage, Charlie Sheen, and Carrie Elwes formed a club called the Stingrays. And they all have tattoos. They have a tattoo that they all had, and it's a stingray in a shower.
Okay.
Go figure. But like, where's that? That's legendary Hollywood stuff that nobody talks about.
I'm so curious about that, because when I worked with him, obviously that was long in the past, you know?
Yes.
So I don't really know much. I mean, he would tell some cool stories, but I don't know him like that. You might, but I don't.
Yeah, those were great, great days. You also worked with one of my favorite people, Dennis Hopper.
Yes, my first movie.
Oh my gosh. Then it says 2002. And he was, I got to know him really late in life. And I obviously never knew the crazy Dennis Hopper, you know, of legend. And he was just a lovely, lovely, I feel like we both got sober at the same facility. And that's how I met him, through sobriety. And he was the absolute greatest. And getting him talking about Apocalypse Now stories was maybe my favorite thing ever.
I agree. He told a few of those. Yeah, I loved him. I mean, he definitely had a temper, and he was still a little crazy.
Amazing.
I mean, I have some great stories about him for sure. He hated my co-star, and he was so upset that he wouldn't, as days went on, he wouldn't even talk to him. And this big scene was coming up between the two of them. He didn't want to do it because he thought he was, you know, he just didn't like him and he didn't think he was any good. And I mean, that whole movie was a disaster, by the way, but regardless, he told the producers, I'm not doing the scene. I'd rather do it talking to a goat. And that's what's in the movie. He did the scene talking to a goat.
Come on.
No, for real. It was pretty amazing.
That might be one of the great stories I've ever heard.
Yeah.
I'd rather talk to a goat.
Yeah.
I might have to use that. I've got some actors sometimes I'm like, really? Talk to a goat. And I can say it's good enough for Dennis Hopper. It's good enough for me.
Yeah.
You've worked with so many great, great actors. I mean, you really have. Ed Harris.
Yeah, I feel, yeah. Ed was, I call him like a mentor. I mean, he wouldn't, but I was very green, you know, when we did that movie, and he played Beethoven, and he was just, you know, I was still trying to figure it out and just trying to get a grip of my emotions and how to dose them and handle them and all that stuff. And he gave me some pretty great advice, and he was very generous with me. I'll never forget. And he prepped with me. He wanted me to do really well. Like, I really appreciated him as a person. He's so funny. Like, I remember filming in Budapest, and, you know, one of the great cities, great food, yes, great everything, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember getting there and checking into the hotel, and it was kind of late. I said, oh, I'm not going to stay in. I'm going to go and get some great goulash or whatever, you know, I'm going out. And as the hotel is right in the center. And as I'm leaving, I'm crossing the street, and there's like a McDonald's like on the corner, and, you know, bright neon lights. And there's Ed Harris eating a burger in fucking Budapest. You know, like, I remember knocking on the window. I'm like, really? This is your first meal of the day? A burger at McDonald's in Budapest.
When I'm abroad in places like that, I call McDonald's the American Embassy.
yeah, okay.
my Ed Harris, my only Ed Harris story is my wife, before she retired, was one of the great makeup artists who specialized in doing men. And she did Al Pacino and Alec on Glengarry Glen Ross.
And so I went to visit, and I was sitting in the makeup room, but I was reading the paper. And I guess Ed had come in and hadn't seen me and was like saying to my wife, you know, who was still is an amazing looker. I mean, she's just like, I mean, I was like, wow. And Ed going, so, so you really, you're dating that Rob Lowe guy? You still dating him? And I just, folded the paper. Yeah, Ed, she still is. He also has a great moment in Glengarry, another movie I'm obsessed with. It's like Inglourious, one of the great opening sequences of all time. Alec's famous always be closing, coffee's for closers only. That speech, which I got to be there to watch. He gets in Ed's face. And all those guys, I was there, so this is not apocryphal. I was there. Those guys hated it. They hated being clinicked by this young, handsome, amazing actor. They hated it. And part of it was the characters hated it too, right? So yeah. They're, you know, but it was also personal. It was. Nobody's going to tell me it wasn't. I saw it. And Ed in particular. And there's this great moment where Ed goes, what's your name? He goes, what's my name? My watch costs more than your car. That's my name. And he does it right in Ed's face. And Ed does this little, and Ed doesn't have any lines. He can't react. This is not, you know, it's David Mamet. You're not reacting. If you have no lines, you got to shut up and take it. And you could just see him seething. And he does this great little thing with his hands where he sticks it in Alec's face and goes like, meh, 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 meh. Like a puppet. Sock puppet hands. And I thought that was pretty cool. Like he got to get back at Alec a little bit without having any dialogue today.
Any lines, yeah.
It was pretty cool. How was your COVID experience? You've been in Paris this whole time?
No. I was working in LA when we got shut down. And so we were kind of in LA for a year and a half. Yeah. So actually given the circumstances, it was a lovely time for the family, in a way. You know, Norman and I don't think since we've been dating really had to spend ever that long of a time, you know, uninterrupted. And our baby was very young.
And you made it. You made it together.
And we made it. I know.
You made it.
Right? How was it for you?
I worked the whole time.
What?
I don't know how. Yes. I worked more during COVID than I did in my career. It was insane. I started this podcast. I filmed two seasons of a massive show. It's 911 Lone Star. It's the Ryan Murphy action show for Fox. It's massive every day. And I did something else as well. And
how come they didn't shut down?
We were COVID happened everything shut down March 12th. I remember because my birthday is March 17th. So March 12th, the country shut down basically. And that happened to be our hiatus.
Oh.
And by the time we were ready to get up and running, they had figured out the protocols, but we were one of the experimental, shows to come back and see if it could even be done.
Right.
And we were able to do it, and I escaped having COVID until just literally about 8 weeks ago. I finally got it. And,
oh, wow. Yeah. How was it?
It was like our super, 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 super duper, uber horrible flu. And I got over it. But the thing that was the headline for me was how long it took me once I was clear and testing negative to get my energy back. That was really gnarly. Super gnarly. Like
Were you vaccinated, if I may ask?
Fully vaccinated. Fully everything.
Oh.
And I'm the kind of person that happily works out every day. Loves it. Or like I can go from 18 holes of golf to the gym to a surfing session and not think anything of it. I could not do anything except get through my day and nap. And I thought, is this going to be my future? And it took like 3 weeks. And then it came back like that.
Wow.
Super exhausted.
Yeah. I mean, we finally all got it from our daughter. She came, you know, she got it at school, I'm assuming. But just now, like over Easter. And I have to say, I had just gotten my fourth shot 2 weeks before I had no symptoms because I just knew because of I was getting tested for work.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, called Norman. I said, you have to get Nova out of school. I'm testing positive. Like, I'm sure she has it. Sure enough. And then he tested positive as well. For me, it was like one night, didn't feel great, but I've definitely been sicker in my life. Woke up like nothing ever happened. Nothing.
Amazing.
And then Norman, he only had three shots and he was pretty sick for 3 days, like fever and stuff. But
I literally have a Q-tip stuck into my cerebellum. Like,
yeah,
it's like it never ends. I'm checked every 3 days. It's been every 3 days for 2.5 years. And it's like, I wonder when it's going to end. It may never. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sorry it took so long for you. That's crazy.
But I guess it's a good thing. I thought I was not going to get it. I thought maybe I have a blood type or maybe all the vaccinations or whatever. I thought I was never going to get it. And sure enough, whammo. So we were able to get through it. But I look back at the footage. This is it's a new show I have on Netflix coming out in April. And I look at it, at some of the shots, and I'm like, oh boy.
You can see it. Okay.
Oh my God. Yes.
Really? Like,
can we do some special effects? Because I look like a sick mofo.
So how long do you have to take a break now? Is it 5 days or is it still 10 days?
It's five now.
Five, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's officially five. And it happened on a Wednesday. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And wasn't so bad.
Yeah, good.
As those things go. Tell me, okay, you're in Paris. What is your favorite part of Paris? Because I love that city so much. It's such a great city.
I love it here. I mean, I used to live here for 25 years.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, that's a long time. Oh, so you really know it.
I went to drama school in France and started out really making French movies. So I've had a place here right up until I was pregnant. And then I sold my place to the late Karl Lagerfeld because it was a walk up, and it was right. We were neighbors and he bought it for his assistant.
Wow.
And I was pregnant. I was like, oh, we'll just buy another place that's more kid friendly when she's born. And as things go, of course, it's not so easy to travel with a kid and mm-hmm. Norman being an American and working a lot there, that didn't happen. So truly this has been the biggest gift. Like, it's just total coincidence that his show would go here. And this is my first French movie in almost 2 years because of COVID. And we're renting a place that is on the same street that I used to live at. And he's loving it. And Nova, is going to school here for the year. We're loving being here. It's so nice to be out of New York for a minute.
Well, this has been so great. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
This is great. I'm going to read the book. I want to get it and read it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take a walk around the city for me, please. What a lovely person. Great stuff. Really, really great stuff. I hope you enjoyed it. All right, just one more thing before we end today's episode. Let's check the lowdown line.
Hello, you've reached literally in our lowdown line, where you can get the lowdown on all things about me, Rob Lowe. 323-570-4551. So have at it. Here's the beep.
Hi, Rob. This is Lori from Ann Arbor. Go Blue. My question is if you prefer comedy or drama. I love that you seem to transition seamlessly from comedy, like The Grinder, which was canceled way too soon, and Austin Powers, et cetera, to Bad Influence. Do you prefer comedy or drama? And which do you find harder to do? Keep up the good work. I enjoy your podcast and your books as well. Thanks so much. Bye.
Oh, thank you. As an Ohio State Buckeye, you sound like a very nice person for somebody from Ann Arbor. Here's the problem. I like them both equally. And I'll tell you why it's an issue. Because if you like one more than the other, you kind of just end up doing one more than the other, or you're known for that and you don't have to push to be able to do both. I'm really lucky that I can do both, like to do both, and that people know that I can do both. So I do both. In fact, as we're recording this, I am shooting season 4 of 911 Lone Star, drama, intense, you know, hero stuff, and shooting a new show from Netflix called Unstable that is it's a goofy, insane, absurdist comedy. And really, if I can't service both my hero and my nerd, then I just don't feel fulfilled. And it enables me to go back and enjoy whichever one I haven't been doing. So, which is why I've designed this for myself, to be able to do a drama and then on my hiatus do a comedy and just rinse and repeat. But I love the fact that you like them both. And that's really gratifying because a lot of folks don't get that opportunity and I've been blessed to do it. Thanks for calling. By the way, don't forget to send a link of our show to your group chats. Because a couple people have come up to me and gone, somebody sent me a link of the podcast. I didn't even know it was on, and I just love it. So I would love that. Pick somebody you think might enjoy what we're up to here. And in the meantime, I will see you next week because we have amazing stuff coming up. And you have been listening to Literally with me, Rob Lowe.
You've been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe, produced by me, Rob Schulte, with help from associate producer Sarah Bagar. Our research is done by Alyssa Grahl. The podcast is executive produced by Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Adam Sachs, Jeff Ross, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. All of the music on this podcast was composed by Devin Bryant. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Literally with Rob Lowe.
This has been a Team Coco production. In association with Stitcher.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.